Hello, everyone. I'm Tucson Sentinel government and political impact reporter Jim Nintzel, sitting in for the legendary Bill Buckmaster here on The Buckmaster Show. It's Thursday, August 24th, and producer Tom Fairbanks is across the window from me here in the Green Things Zocalo Village studio. In a little while, we'll be talking about the upcoming Labor Day weekend HoCo Festival with Hotel Congress Entertainment Director David Slutz. And we'll also talk with reporter and novelist Leo W. Banks about his new book. But we begin today with two young journalists who have been working as interns for the Tucson Sentinel this summer. I've been very impressed with what they've been doing with us, and I invited them to come talk about their experiences here in Tucson. Joining us via the Buckmaster Live Line, presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management, is Natalie Robbins, a student at the Craig Newmark Graduate School of Journalism at City University of New York. And here in the studio with me is Daniel Shaler, who is here all the way from across the pond in England. He was studying at the Columbia School of Journalism in New York before he came out to the desert to work with the Sentinel this summer. Thanks to both of you for joining us.
Hi, Jim. How are you?
Hey, Natalie, you're coming in loud and clear. Let's start with you. What brought you here to Tucson for a summer internship with the Tucson Sentinel?
So I grew up in Tucson. I went to Tucson High, went to the U of A. I've lived in New York for about 5 years now, but Tucson is always really close to my heart, I think. And I had been paying attention to what the Sentinel was doing, and we really are the only outlet for Tucson these days. We're really some of the best journalism in the Tucson area, and I was super excited to be a part of it.
Well, I appreciate the kind words for the Tucson Sentinel. For our listeners who aren't aware, we are an online news site. You can read us at TucsonSentinel.com, and we are producing a lot of local news trying to fill the gaps, really, that the corporate media has allowed to develop over the years. Daniel, how about you? What brought you out here to Tucson, Arizona? You're a long way from home.
I am, yeah. I was studying journalism in New York immediately before I came here. And I agree with Natalie, it's a shame there's not many kind of local news outlets left that give you the time and the space to report out a local story. So it's my first journalism job, and I couldn't really have asked for a better place to learn the ropes from the other reporters and from the stories Natalie and I have been telling.
Natalie, let's talk a little bit about some of the work you've done. You had this amazing story a few weeks ago about how the Pima County Sheriff's Department failed to notify the family of a young homeless man about how he had died in Pima County Jail. And this was something you came across while you were looking into some of these deaths at Pima County Jail and going over autopsy reports. And tell us a little bit about this story.
So this is something that I kind of stumbled upon by accident. I had been investigating the Pima County Jail for maybe a month, and I had, using a public records request, I had requested a list of autopsies of everybody who died in the jail for the last 2 months. And I, in looking for them, and I was looking for their families so I could interview them and learn a little bit more about them, I started just sort of Googling these people's names. And I Googled this man, Caleb, who died on the 21st of May of this year, and I found his Facebook, like, almost immediately, where his family had been posting that he was missing, that they hadn't heard from him for 3 months. They didn't know where he was. They were really worried. So it became clear to me that they didn't know that he had died. So we had to notify them, and they called the medical examiner, and they got confirmation it was him. And I was able to speak with his family, and it was really, devastating, I think, for them. And it was hard on me to kind of bear witness to, but I think ultimately it taught me a lot about being a reporter, sort of how you just find something that interests you and you go down that rabbit hole, and sometimes what you find is really huge. And I'm happy that we were able to bring closure to them, even though it was so tragic.
And I think it speaks to the importance of having reporters out there who are going to be, you know, looking over autopsy reports and looking into what's going on in the jail. And obviously, we've had a lot of deaths in that jail in recent years. And go on.
I mean, I just think it's amazing sort of what you can get if you do a records request, you know, like what they actually will provide you with.
And I think it was, you did an incredible job of telling the story, but what did the sheriff's, talk about a little bit what the sheriff's department said about why this notification wasn't made.
So the sheriff's department said that they attempted to find his family. When you are arrested or booked into jail, you provide a next of kin or an emergency contact. He did not provide a next of kin. He provided an address in Sierra Vista where they claimed that they went to, but nobody was there. That was his mother's address, she told me, and she had moved to Sholo a couple months earlier. But she claims that she updated everything with the DMV. She changed her address. They claimed that they found a sister in Wisconsin, and they went to her house, the Wisconsin police, but nobody was there. I talked to the family, and they said, none of us have ever lived in Wisconsin. His mom said, I lived there once when I was really young, but we have no family in Wisconsin. So they claimed that they tried. They said, you know, when we asked them sort of, why didn't you just do an internet search, you would have seen that he was missing. They said, we don't, that's not our our policy to use Google.
Or apparently the social media, which is what I think you went to Facebook and discovered this, right?
I did.
Yeah. And then the family came here and they ended up having to pay money to recover his remains.
Yeah, so the policy at the medical examiner's office is if there is an unclaimed body, I believe it's 15 days, I want to say, 2 weeks, until it's cremated, sort of automatically. I spoke with his dad a couple days ago, who told me that Caleb was part Native American, and so they wanted to do a burial ceremony for him, and now they can't because he has been cremated, and his mother had to pay $600 to get his remains released to her.
An extraordinary story. And Daniel, let's turn to you. You've been doing a lot of reporting on a proposed mine in the Patagonia area. And can you talk a little bit about what you've learned about this?
Sure. South 32 is an Australian mining company that operates around the world. And from around just a couple of months before I got here, they started to really amp up for this project called the Hermosa Project in the Patagonia Mountains, which is about 80 miles south of Tucson. And it's an interesting project for a lot of reasons. It's not a case of just being it's not a fossil fuel mine, it's not a coal mine, it's a mine for the kind of critical minerals which at a national level are the kinds of things that are going to help with the green transition towards electric vehicles and that kind of thing. So there's, I think, more than with some other mines, convincing cases to make on both sides of this argument. It's going to cause a lot of destruction, locals would argue, to a pretty pristine area in the Patagonia Mountains. But at the same time, if we want to make the kind of green transition that we're going to need to make at scale and at speed, there are arguments for the mine as well, I think.
So you're seeing local opposition to the mine?
In fact, the mine is seeing court this afternoon for the first time. Local groups like the Patagonia Area Resource Alliance, the Center for Biological Diversity, which is actually headquartered in Tucson, are bringing two mining companies, South 32 and Barksdale Resources, to court to try and get some of the first exploratory drilling in the mountains halted, to give a judge the time to kind of assess the merits of that case and exactly how much ecological harm is going to be caused by some of that drilling.
And the mine owners are saying this is going to be about as green a mine as you can have.
Next generation is how they'd describe it. Yeah, it's remote operated. It is using a fleet of electric vehicles. So actually there won't be, to my knowledge, people in the mine. It'll be kind of a bunch of people at a kind of space stations type office with remote controls operating the mine. That said, I think the locals' concerns at this point are to do with what's being mined, which is manganese, like I say, a critical mineral for that transition. But also something that in some of South 32's operations internationally, manganese dust has been shown to cause this pretty horrible neurodegenerative disease, very similar to Parkinson's, in one of their manganese mines in South Africa. So the locals' concern is, for all the good this mineral could do, were there to be some kind of accident at the mine or at the processing facility, that could have pretty disastrous public health impacts as well.
And where, you said they're doing some exploratory drilling now, where is this in the process?
They got the permits for this exploratory drilling, the two companies, Barksdale and South 32, in May and June, respectively. Since those permits were given, they've been allowed to drill 24/7. The court hearing this afternoon is, like I say, those local environmental groups represented by a legal group called Earth Justice to try and get that stopped immediately while a judge can hear more arguments about it. If that drilling goes ahead, South 32 are hoping to, in the next couple of years, amp up that mining, and they're expecting federal permits to drill out underneath public land. The decision for that is expected in 2026.
Okay, so this is the very start of what it will be likely a long both legal battle and the project itself will stretch into the years to come.
Yeah, it'll draw comparisons, and it already has, to the Rosemont mine, which, as locals will know, that battle dragged on for decades and decades. And certainly, if advocates have their way, I think it'll either be stopped sooner rather than later or dragged out such that it doesn't really become an economically viable prospect for that mine long term.
And they are not doing, unlike Rosemont, it's not going to be an open pit mine.
Yeah,
down in the Patagonia map.
Yeah, it'll be closed pit. And another difference from Rosemont is again, the type of stuff they're mining is not, it's not, you know, copper or coal or anything like that. It's manganese and zinc, which are the kind of things that'll go into batteries for electric vehicles and for kind of defense projects as well, probably.
Natalie, let's go back to you. Can you talk a little bit about what inspired you to get involved in journalism?
I think, you know, I think honestly, my family kind of inspired me. I think my dad was a journalist in Tucson for a long time, and growing up around him really inspired me to be brave and to be curious about stuff, you know, to be interested in the world around you. And I knew I always loved to write, but I think in the last few years, I started putting those pieces together and realizing that journalism is really a lot of fun, and you get to just every single day is something new, and you get to sort of discover, meet people and discover their stories every day, which is really special, I think.
And what are you hoping to do with your career? You have thoughts about where you'd like it to go from here?
You know, I would love to be, a staff writer somewhere, I think. I love the Southwest and I love Arizona. I would love it if my career could take me back there. But I'm pretty open. I'm excited for the future. I'm graduating in May, so.
Well, good luck to you upon your graduation and as well as finding a good landing point. Is there a particular area where you're thinking this is the sort of thing I want to be reporting on?
I'm really interested in sort of investigative reporting now. I'm really, my interest is piqued in justice reporting. In New York, we have Rikers Island, and there's a lot of stories happening there. There's a lot, of course, to investigate in Rikers Island. So I'm excited about justice reporting right now.
And how about you, Daniel? This is your first taste of journalism, I think. And what do you see? Where do you see yourself going?
I've really enjoyed it. It is my first full-time journalism gig. And it has been, like Natalie says, such a rewarding and an enjoyable time. I finish with the Sentinel in about a week and a half, and then I am off to Mexico City. I have another internship with the Associated Press on their climate desk down in Mexico City, so we'll be covering climate across Central and South America up until Christmas.
All right. Hey, Natalie, we're going to let you go. Daniel's going to stay in here and actually co-host the remainder of the show since he's here in the studio with me. And I just want to say thank you for all that you did for us this summer. I think you just did some outstanding reporting. And, you know, best of luck to you for what you got going on in the future.
Jim, thank you so much. It's been a blast.
All right, and then we're going to take a commercial break, but I want to remind folks that this portion of the Buckmaster Show is presented by Mona's Danish Bakery, home of the Danish Kringle. Mona's is located on the northeast corner of Swan and Sunrise, and Mona's is open Tuesday through Sunday for your breakfast and lunch. Treat yourself to their mouth-watering pastries, including the famous Danish Kringle. MonasDanishBakery.com or BuckmasterShow.com for a link to Mona's Danish Bakery. We'll be
Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com.
The Regional Transportation Authority's 20-year plan includes roadway, transit, pedestrian, bicycle, and many other transportation improvements across the region. Pima County voters approved the plan in 2006. And the RTA is working with the Citizens Advisory Committee to prepare and present a new draft plan as early as 2023 for public review. Learn more about the process at rtanext.com.
Buckmaster Show listeners know that I'm passionate about travel. When I'm ready to take off on a new adventure, my air travel begins and ends at Tucson International Airport. TUS is nonstop for our community and Southern Arizona. So remember, to fly local, fly Tucson. Tucson International is nonstop for Tucson. More at flytucson.com.
The nonprofit Tucson Wildlife Center has been helping injured, sick, and orphan wildlife in Southern Arizona since 1999. They're dedicated to the rescue, medical care, and rehabilitation of sick, injured, and orphan wildlife, with the goal of releasing them back to their natural habitat. Around 5,000 animals a year come to them, as they are the only wildlife rescue in Southern Arizona. All made possible through donations. They receive no government funding. Please donate at TucsonWildlife.com.
Hi, this is Irene Coppola, President and CEO of the Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona. The BBB sets the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the resource to turn to for the objective, unbiased information on businesses offering national and local consumer services online and in person. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau at bbb.org.
Thinking about a river cruise? Let Bon Voyage Travel guide you to choose the perfect cruise to complement your vacation dreams. River cruising has become more popular than ever, and we know you have so many options to consider when selecting the destination, cruise line, and ship. At Bon Voyage Travel, we provide a comprehensive presentation on the top tips for river cruises and have a team of specialists to assist you. Visit bvtravel.com and view our River Cruise 101 presentation today.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Buckmaster Show. I'm Jim Nintzel, the government and political impact reporter for the Tucson Sentinel. And co-hosting here with me is Tucson Sentinel intern Daniel Shaler. And joining us now on the Rincon Ventures live line is David Slutz. He's a local rock star and the legendary entertainment director for downtown's historic Hotel Congress. David, welcome to the program.
Hi, thank you. Long-time listener, first-time caller. How you doing, Jim?
We're doing well here in the studio, and we appreciate you joining us. We're going to talk a little bit about HOCO, the Hotel Congress's Labor Day Music Festival, and this is going to be the last one. David, tell us about what HOCO is all about.
Well, it started about 18 years ago to celebrate Club Congress's 20th anniversary as a venue. But we realized, you know, why are we celebrating? And it's really all the music, all the local music, all the great Tucson musicians and artists who have we were able to have grace our stage that really made it special. So we said, why don't we do this event and bring back as many bands as we can? We had reunions and as many different styles, and all the things that made Club Congress special is all the music. So we did this event in 2005 and had a several day event with all these wonderful artists, and it was so much fun and such a success, we decided to keep doing it. And here we are 18 years later. So.
But you can't do a reunion every year. The bloom is kind of off the rose. So
right. And so that was kind of it. I mean, what we did for many years, we did variations on it. We kept bringing back. Turns out there's a lot of great Tucson music. So even though it was supposed to be a one-year event, it went on many years, and we did different versions of it. In fact, until about 2016, we said it needs a complete change, and we did that. We had my assistant take over, and he's a young, really great progressive music guy, and we turned it into a really neat international music showcase for all these wonderful acts around the world. And we did this for several years, got stumbled by COVID, of course, did one final version of that last year. It was a big undertaking. I mean, unbelievable. And then Matt, who did this, moved on. And now we're this year going, I'm back. I said, I'll take it back in charge. Let's do one more year. Let's do one great year. Let's go back to the roots. Let's celebrate as much great Tucson music as we can in one final giant blowout, and leave with walk away proudly.
Leave it all on the field.
Yeah, that's right. Give 110%.
So the theme this year is homecoming. And
right.
Talk about what's on the lineup.
Well, I mean, unless you have a couple hours, I'll try to make it quick.
We have to take a break for news in about 4.5 minutes, but see what you can get out between now and then.
Sure. Well, we have, it looks like it just at 70 acts, different genres, different eras. We have a big heavy metal stage. We have a desert rock stage featuring Giant Sand Sidewinders. We have the Dusty Chaps featuring on a big stage. We have Sergi Mendoza featuring on a big stage. We have the best hip-hop stage you've ever seen in your life. We have this great jazz lineup. We have so many different things. And what was missing, the big elephant in the room for many years for this thing is, like, if you're celebrating local music, you can't do it without the greatest. And that, frankly, is Linda Ronstadt. And obviously, she can't perform now. So how can we honor Linda in this thing and make it relevant, make it substantive? And so we decided to take each night, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, and do something special around Linda Ronstadt and talk about her career. And so on the first night, we're going to have a big band with Catherine Byrne and Jeff Haskell leading this Nelson Riddle Orchestra record she did. So it's a great jazz night for that. The following day, we have her cousin Pete Ronstadt, a wonderful musician in his own right, going to lead called Songs and Stories, Linda Ronstadt, which will feature those classic hits of the 70s we all know. And that leads right into the Dusty Chap set, which is, boy, you're going to be thrown right back in the 70s, and it's going to be Tucson personified right there. And the final day, and kind of what I'm really excited about, is the Canzone de mi Padre stage, which is obviously her legendary record, which the Linda people who we've been talking with, we're going to re-release later that month anyway as a big release. It hasn't been out in the public for years. And we talked to them and said, well, why don't we re-release it at Hoco Fest? And everyone loved it. Linda loved the idea. So not only we're going to re-release the record there, we're going to bring in Los Enzontes, this band that Linda works with all the time, and they're going to sort of host this special segment of the Latin music-flavored Linda Ronstadt career, which it's going to be great. And that leads right into Brian Lopez and Sergio Mendoza and all these wonderful artists. So it's going to be an incredible night.
And that's on Sunday. That's a Sunday night. It's Friday,
that's
Saturday,
right.
Sunday. And then you have some stuff going on Monday?
Yeah, well, we have called the Hoco Hangover. So we have one of Arizona's most popular heavy bands called The Bled Reunion, and doing a big show in the nightclub. And then we're doing a free show on the plaza with Gemini Dragon. So you come down and eat. While the food truck going, we'll have just sort of a Labor Day party. It should be, we're going to start the event off with a free show, and we're going to end it with one. The free show on Thursday night is the Hoka Ola Oko with a bunch of great new Latin bands, good dance bands, a lot of fun, and then we'll end with a free party on the end, too. So you can capture little bits on the edges for free if you need to come down and save some bucks.
And then the you mentioned the Linda Ronstadt, but I think you've also got the Linda Ronstadt documentary and a few of the films she's been in.
Well, yeah, that's the other thing. We also have other features. We have a record fair. We have a Hoko swim party. But the really key thing is this the Hoko Film Festival, and it will feature a lot of Linda movies. But it will also feature a couple of premieres, the Tale of Two Houses movie, which is by this wonderful filmmaker, Chris Carlone, who's also in one of the bands. We put this thing together about a special time in Tucson music history from the 85-86. Don't have enough time to talk all about it, but everybody's very excited about it. We're going to have that premiere at the Loft on Saturday at 2 o'clock, and that's almost sold out. Everyone's excited about this movie. You should read all about it. And, of course, a full schedule of other Tucson-related music films. Obviously, Linda Heavy, but both at the Loft and at the Screening Room that weekend.
And we've got about 25 seconds left as we move towards our news break. So want to definitely talk a little bit more about that film and some of the other films you're going to have when we come back on the other side of the break. We will be back in just a moment with Dave Slutz, the rock star and entertainment director for Hotel Congress.
Dine in or take out authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza at Vero Amore, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, and panini are homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell, and on Dove Mountain in Marana. Plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore, on the web at veroamorepizza.com. For more than a half century, Tucson Gardeners Trust Green Things, a family-owned and operated retail and wholesale plant nursery, offering an amazing variety of plants, trees, cacti, pottery, and so much more, all at great prices. The 13.5-acre site by the Rito River is also home to the Zocalo Village, specializing in fine Mexican and Latin American imported furniture and art. Green Things open daily at 3384 East River Road and at greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com. Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary, home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and penal politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Family owned and run since 1985, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is the gold standard for quality and professionalism for picture framing, custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, and hanging and lighting solutions. Come in for your design session or set it up electronically. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and now doing e-commerce at moesgallery.com.
Welcome back to the Buckmaster Show. I'm your guest host, Tucson Sentinel government and political impact reporter Jim Nintzel, filling in for Bill as he takes a much-needed break. With me in the studio is Daniel Shaler. Boy, Daniel, I'm really struggling name today. He's just getting his start in journalism, and we're talking with David Slutz, the entertainment director for Hotel Congress, which is hosting the final edition of the Labor Day weekend HoCo Festival. But first, we have a little love for one of our sponsors, Green Things, and I want to remind you that since 1970s, Green Things has been the go-to place for your gardening needs. Green Things is on the lovely 13-acre site that is also home to the Zocalo Village and all of those fine Mexican and Latin American imported furniture and art. Green Things on River Road, just west of the Brandy Fenton Park, and on the web at greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com. Now, David, I wanted to bring in Daniel here to grill you a little bit about the festival.
Hi, David. It's Daniel.
All right, Daniel, what's your Dever name?
What's that? Sorry?
I was making fun of your name as the intern should, as Jim has done the last two passes.
That's fair enough. You can probably tell from my accent I'm not Tucson or Southern Arizona born and raised. So this is my first HoCo coming up. And I was wondering, over the years you've been at the helm, if there are any years that have, you know, any highlights, any years that have stood out, any years where it looked like maybe it wasn't going to come together in time, just, you know.
Those are great questions. Well, obviously the first year, we never knew what was going to happen with it. So when it all came together and all these bands came together, it was just a remarkable, and it was basically like a class reunion for everyone. And it was really marvelous to see all the kinship, the camaraderie from all different eras and generations come together. That's really kind of why we inspired it. And the second year did it again with almost the same love. It was really wonderful. Now, the switch over in 2017 was a remarkable year too, because we had to change and re-educate everyone to what we were doing. We had people who'd been playing every year who weren't going to be playing that this year, because we have great artists who've been, like Sergio Mendoza, who played every year, just to replace them with all these new interesting artists from around the world. So that was a challenge, but it was really successful in itself. It was a very interesting switch, just because we went from a celebration to some music to a celebration of what Hotel Congress can offer to Tucson to show what's going on in the world. We have this special event. Now, the following year, it rained. And oddly enough, we've had this on Labor Day for 18 years, and only three times have we had really impact from rain. Those are the biggest challenging years, when we have this big outdoor stage that gets just rained on. We forget, oh yeah, we're still in the weather, and it can cause chaos. But other than that, it's been overall, and with the exception of COVID, just a terrific run.
Mm-hmm. And David, you mentioned the Sidewinders will be playing. That's your band. Coming back together. How did you get into the rock and roll biz?
Well, you know, I grew up, and part of why I do this and why I really think I have the best job in town is that I grew up loving the local music community. When I was a 16-year-old sneaking into all the venues just to watch shows, I was nurtured by this scene and all these different acts, and I loved them all, from, you know, the street pajamas of the jazz world to the punk rock bands to the classic new wave bands that I saw in my era. Just amazing stuff. And so I just sort of grew up in it, started to form my own band in it, and we were taken care of by the local community, and we did pretty well there for a while. And then I landed this job, and I felt it was sort of a duty and mission to continue to do what we could in using this platform of this wonderful space to nurture the community and give as many great artists a chance to show their wares. So did that answer your question? I even forgot what you said.
I think it did. And, you know, Hotel Congress started out as a very small, or Hotel Congress, I should say Club Congress, started out as a fairly small little club within the hotel at a time when the hotel was just beginning its renaissance, its renovation in the mid 80s. And talk a little bit. I mean, now you have multiple venues. You have your outdoor venue. Yeah. You have the club. You have the recently reopened Century Room. Talk a little bit about the importance of Hotel Congress and the tiny acorn to which it has grown into a mighty oak.
Right. I mean, it could be fairly subjective, but I think this has always been the place, at least for the last 30 years, where people came to and they knew you could find music and we grow it. And I'm stand on the shoulders of others who started this thing. And from just the creative energy that happened here, people naturally gravitate to it. I mean, Richard and Shana Osaran, who own the place, has given a lot of room to a lot of creative people to do some cool things here, and we're very grateful. And because of its success, we started with the club and having a dance night on one night a week and live music, then to every night, and then we expanded to said we're getting bigger shows and we need to do more things, so we expanded to this large plaza event space and which can hold a lot of people. And then a couple of years ago, a year and a half ago, we opened up Tucson's only real jazz club, and it's been just a remarkable success. I mean, it's packed every night, and who knew Tucson had that many jazz fans? We're very grateful for that too. Arthur Vint, who runs that, is just phenomenal booker. He comes from the Vanguard in New York and from a Tucson roots, but to that experience is just made it unlike anything else. And many communities don't get something like that. So it's all under this 104-year-old roof, you know, so it's pretty cool and it's pretty unique, and it's something you can always tell people from out of town you want to go to because it's special.
It's funny you should mention, when I first moved here back in June, the very first place Natalie, our other intern for the summer who's from Tucson, took me was Hotel Congress. So it was my introduction to Tucson back then.
Anyone who likes arts and culture specifically, and you're not going to just play golf, you say, well, let's start at Congress, because you can always start here. It's great people watching, and you that kind of, it has that feel. You start there and then you go somewhere else because it's a natural. It has that feel, and we're very proud of that.
And go talk a little bit more about this. The film, I think I'm really intrigued by, which is that Tale of Two Houses and the history there.
Well, I know it because I was there, but it's the funniest story, and it's a movie writ large, this little scene that all the young musicians from the mid 80s who kind of knew how to play, kind of just a group of people who couldn't really find places in real venues. There was no DIY spots for them to go, so these two houses there at Speedway and Euclid next to Greasy Tony's became sort of a home for that. And there's kids who rented them out, and they just open their doors and have shows there every weekend. And it just became this meeting ground. And it's something you think about and you go, oh, that's fond memory. But Chris decided, I'm going to dig deeper. And he decided to make a movie about it and found all this great footage. And it really just, I think anyone would be fascinated by seeing how the nascent scenes are grown and how these little groups of people get together and how music communities come together and the interaction between the players, and how someone like, say, a Gene Rulli, who's one of our old famous best guitar players, was in almost every single band because he's the only one who could play an instrument, you know, and linked it all together. It's fascinating stuff. And I hope everyone gets a chance to see it.
I think you have another film. This was kind of at the dawn of public access in Tucson too, which is probably why you had much footage of people who were checking out cameras and rolling videotape back then.
That's exactly why. This guy, Chris Wagner, who's featured prominently, I believe, but he just brought a camera to everything. And thank God he did, because now we have this documentation and it's just a remarkable, hilarious stuff. And it's commonplace with iPhones, but back then you just didn't get this kind of coverage. It was neat having a public access guy embedded in the scene.
And the High and Dry film is making another return to the film festival as well. And talk about what that's all about.
Sure. High and Dry, and I'd argue the whole enchilada, very similar in that High and Dry was the first. Michael DeBossi, the filmmaker, made this thing about the Tucson music scene, and it sort of, I think, pretty much in conjunction with the first Hoco Fest too, and it was at the same time, same era, And it just really does a great survey of the Tucson music scene up until that time. And it's still, I think, pretty relevant. Half these bands are still existing because Tucson, it's like old cars. They don't rust. They just hang out and continue to drive along. But it's pretty cool. And then following that, from a couple of years ago, the whole enchilada sort of examines the 78 to 94 era of Tucson music. It's a little shorter, but it does a very similar thing. So between those three movies, I think you're going to get a really good feel for what Tucson music is all about.
All right. Well, you know, that's probably all the time we have for this segment. So, David, I want to say thank you for calling in. Encourage folks to get out there to Hotel Congress on Labor Day, and good luck with the festival.
Thank you. All the full fest passes are already sold out, so I hope you can find a show you like and come down to a daily show. That'd be great.
All right. We'll be right back with author Leo W. Banks.
Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastropub, serving an ever-changing menu of craft beer and fine fare. Savor the majestic mountain views from the perfect for any season spacious patio at West Lambert Lane and North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies. On the web at noblehops.com.
At Tucson International Airport, we are nonstop for our community. Our main priorities are providing a safe and secure travel experience and excellent customer service. We're also nonstop for landing prosperity in Southern Arizona by attracting new flights for business travel and family getaways. When your airport thrives, our community thrives. So fly local, fly TUS. Tucson International Airport is nonstop for Tucson.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
The Regional Transportation Authority plan is funded by a voter-approved half-cent sales tax. The RTA tax is collected throughout Pima County and averages about $100 million in revenue each month. The RTA is the largest annual funder of regional transportation projects in the region. The RTA tax funds priority projects that were approved by voters in 2006. See details in the latest RTA annual report at rtamobility.com.
This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org.
And we're back with the Buckmaster Show. My name is Jim Ninsel. I'm the government and political impact reporter at the Tucson Sentinel at TucsonSentinel.com. And I'm filling in for the legendary Bill Buckmaster. And I want to remind folks that our friends over in Silver City and Grant County are ready to welcome you back with open arms. It's just 3 hours east of Tucson, and there's so much to do in Silver City and Grant County, New Mexico, which includes hiking in the Hilo National Wilderness, where there is plenty of social distancing. I'm not sure that's as important as it used to be. And you can visit the world-famous Cliff-Dwelling National Monument. For a complete listing of the many things to do and great places to stay, visit southwestnewmexico.org.
And I'm here in the studio with our guest host, Daniel Shaler, who's he's been an intern here at the Tucson Sentinel. He just finished his studies at the Columbia School of Journalism, and he's actually off to Mexico City when he gets done with us. But our next guest is longtime Arizona reporter who can now add novelist to his resume. Leo W. Banks has written for the Wall Street Journal, Boston Globe, Sports Illustrated, Arizona Highways, and many other publications. And a few years back, he published his first novel, Double Wide, a murder mystery about a disgraced former baseball pitcher who gets pulled into the dark world of drug cartels when he sets out to solve the mystery of the murder of an old friend. He followed that one up with a sequel, Champagne Cowboys. His third novel was 45 Caliber Perfume, a political thriller set at the backdrop of a U.S. Senate race. And this month, Leo published The Flying Z, a modern Western noir based on a ranch in southern Arizona. It's a classic tale of a ranch under siege by a drug cartel with an unlikely love story mixed up in the middle of it. Welcome back to the Buckmaster Show, Leo.
Thanks, Jim.
So tell us a little bit about Flying Z.
Well, it's about a southern Arizona rancher. He's a young guy. He's a cowboy. He's having trouble with drug cartels using his land, and a gal from the east. She just graduated from Harvard. She's driving west to go to grad school at Stanford. Her car breaks down on the rancher's land. His name is Will Zachary, hence the Flying Z. He rescues her from some smugglers, and they decide they're going to try to make a go of it. They fall in love and see if they can stay together amid this siege of the land.
It sounds like it's got those pulp elements of an old Western movie, but it's set in the modern day.
Yeah, part Western, part thriller, you know, part crime story, but the love story plays a big part in it too.
All right, Daniel, I think, has a question for you.
Yeah, one thing I was curious to learn a little bit more of. I think probably some of our listeners will have a particular idea of a novelist, a kind of somewhat disheveled individual who goes into a room, closes their eyes, and imagines up these things. But in southern Arizona, it feels like in particular there's a tradition of journalists, essayists turned novelist, Edward Abbey, Charles Bowden. And I was wondering kind of what role and where you see reporting and reportage coming into your fiction writing.
Well, it comes into it every day in every sentence, because when you're writing fiction, you're drawing from all of the things that you've done in the years previous. You know, Hemingway used to say that to be a novelist, you got to look and listen, and he means other people. I heard the previous guest mention the Congress Hotel and downtown in general. Downtown's a great place for me to see characters and try to figure out how to describe them.
Mm-hmm.
How they're smoking, for example, how they're drinking, what they're saying. But all of it comes into play.
Are there any particular reporting trips or stories you remember reporting that you know contributed to this most recent novel?
Oh, plenty of them. I've done a lot of border coverage and spent a lot of time on ranches in southern Arizona. So all of that comes into play. I don't think there's anything in The Flying Z that I haven't seen or has been told to me by someone who was actually there and did it themselves. So it's very contemporary in that sense when you consider the drug situation at the border and the fentanyl coming across and so forth.
Mm-hmm. Jim was telling me in the break you used to teach writing at the University of Arizona. As I was saying, this is my first journalism gig. Any advice for a young writer in journalism and also in kind of fiction writing? That's a tricky one, I know. I'm sorry.
Yeah, no. I mean, journalism is just, it's just dying, at least as we've understood it for the past 50 years, you know, the paper edition. That's opening up other avenues and places where you can do your work, but almost nobody's willing to pay for it, so it's extremely difficult.
Mm-hmm.
When I was teaching journalism classes at the university in the 90s, you could see the trend. I mean, it was happening there. The papers were shrinking, opportunities were shrinking, travel budgets were gone. So, I would tell every class had 20 kids, say, maybe two of them were actually going to go into journalism, were good enough to do it and get a job.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd tell them, try something else, go into TV. you know, the opportunities in TV are there, and frankly, nobody's particularly smart, so you can fit right in.
I think your other advice to journalists was when you would come speak to my class, is that the one thing that you would return to over and over again is you really have to read a lot.
Yeah, you know, I'd say to these kids, I'd try to teach them how to write a story, and most of them weren't very good at it because they weren't readers. So I'd say, you know, no such thing as a great writer without first being a great reader. That's number one. But I'd ask them, say, what do you have next to your bed, not on your night table? Eliminate anything personal and just tell me what's there. And then, you know, you get the usual answers, a clock, you know, the dog's chew toy or whatever. And I'd say, if it isn't books, you know, go into something else. You're not suited to be a journalist. And of course, kids have chosen their major, don't want to hear that, but it's really true. You have to be a reader. Some of these kids wouldn't even read the morning paper back then, which is a requirement. I mean, you got to know what's going on, but they didn't do it. They don't read so much.
And Leo, I wanted to mention that we do have an excerpt of the book up at TucsonSentinel.com. Thanks for sharing the first chapter with us. So if folks are interested in reading it, they can go there and get a taste of what it's all about. But you were also kind enough to give us a sidebar on how to write a novel. Mm-hmm. And you mentioned that this one started coming together some time back.
Some time back. Our son is 27, about to turn 28. When he was 12, so what's that, 16 years ago, he was at basis school on Broadway, and I'd go pick him up at the end of the school day, and I'd sit in the parking lot waiting for him to come out, and I had a yellow legal pad and a pen, and I'd be sketching out scenes for The Flying Z. So I was writing it back then, 16 years ago, and then I'd work on it for several months. Some other project would arrive, and it paid money, so I'd have to do that and then keep going. Every year or two, I'd pick it up and look at it and say, this isn't so bad. Figure out a way to fix it, come back to it a couple of years later. Finally, I don't know, maybe a year and a half ago, I dived in earnest and wrapped it up. And as I said in that Sentinel thing, I finally like it. I finally like it because all of the versions before, I just didn't like it.
And your first two novels featured the unlikely detective, Whip Stark. And I'm just wondering, are we going to see Whip again soon? I miss reading about him.
No, he's making a return. I'm finishing the third in the Whip Stark series. In fact, yesterday I wrote the concluding chapter, the concluding scenes. And I'm not quite sure I like them yet. It happens a lot. You know, you get something down and it comes out a certain way. You go, okay, I'm going to let that simmer. So I'm going to go back tomorrow, the next day, and start reading it again.
Because you bring it up.
I want to get words out of it. You know that, Jim. Anything you write, first draft is overwritten. It's too long. You got to go back and try to get it down.
That's what I was going to ask, because you bring it up. How much of good writing, not just fiction, but reporting as well, is editing things that you've already written or you've already gotten down on paper?
Yeah, it's rewriting. Because anything you do, well, if you're talking about long-form journalism, for example, something in the neighborhood of 2,500 or 3,000 words or 4,000 words, the first draft you write or something like that's not going to be very good. Mm. It's just hard to keep it all together in the first draft. But you go back afterwards and you can fix it. You have a much better set of eyes, you know, new eyes.
All right, we're going to have to wrap it up there, Leo. I want to thank you for joining us today. The new book, Flying Z, get out there and get a copy of it for some good old-fashioned local Arizona writing. I also want to thank my co-host here, Daniel Shaler, who's been in Tucson, working at the Tucson Sentinel as an intern this summer. I want to thank David Slutz, entertainment director at Hotel Congress. Get out here for the HOCO Festival. And, of course, Natalie Robbins, who joined us at the top of the hour, also an intern at the Sentinel. Join us tomorrow for another edition of The Buckmaster Show. I'm Jim Nintzel, signing off.